You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz, the 5th of March. As the Jazz do what they need to do over the weekend, we'll break down those games, look at what the next step for this team to click in needs to be, and then run through what happened on the playoff weekend as well. All coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great. Thanks for tuning into the program. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, analysis, some geeky numbers, a look behind the curtains, all that for you. Each and every day, right here on Locked On Jazz, wherever you grab your podcast. Today's show brought to you by The Advocates, Intercap Lending, and our friends over at Grip 6 with their brand new website at grip6.com. All right, let's get right to it. Jazz, over the weekend, execute exactly what they need to. The key to this whole insane, seemingly impossible playoff run is going to be to just win the games you're supposed to. Minnesota on a back end of a back-to-back with Karl-Anthony Towns getting ejected without Jimmy Butler. The Jazz got that one a little bit on a silver platter, had a very good offensive game against a not very good defensive team. 14th best offensive outing of the season, a 114 offensive rating, and interestingly did it without the three ball falling as they hit just 9 of 29. They had their season high shots in the restricted area. 35 shots in the restricted areas. Just Minnesota put up very little resistance. The Jazz took advantage. The Jazz did not have a very good defensive night. If you listen to postcast with Ron Boone, Ron was pretty frustrated with the Jazz defensive outing that evening. Felt as though they slipped that night. And it's true. He's absolutely right. Statistically, that was the first time in a while that we had seen the Jazz just kind of not defensively do what it needed to do. Now, they were in control of that game. They didn't blow out a team that maybe they could have run away from a little bit with all the problems Minnesota had. We thought really the first opening 5 minutes of the third quarter that the Jazz could blitz them a little bit. Didn't do that, and largely because they just never put down the clamps defensively in the same capacity that they have all season long. Otherwise, you know, when you look at that one, some of the same things kind of reared their ugly head. The turnover problem wasn't quite as severe for the Jazz that night, but they, at the same time, that second unit just doesn't look as though it's quite certain on what it's supposed to do and where it's getting its shots and how it's getting its shots. And that's pretty clear when you kind of look at that game, the 116-108 win. Jay Crowder takes 15 shots. Donovan Mitchell takes 18. And maybe that's where we are. Then Gobert took 9. Ingles took 9. Favors took 9. That it's not defined perfectly. Gobert was huge. 26 points, 16 rebounds, 4 blocks. He's absurdly dominant right now. There are a few numbers on Rudy. In the last 5 games, he's shooting 74%. 17 points, 11 rebounds. 12 of his last 15 games have been a double-double. And then get into what the defense is since Rudy's come back. It's pretty outstanding. The Jazz defensive rating since Rudy's come back with Rudy on the floor is a 98.2 defensive rating, and the Jazz are even better when he's on the floor. So this is Rudy is playing at an extremely, extremely high level right now and dominated that Minnesota game, particularly after Karl-Anthony Towns was done after 20 minutes of action. So the Jazz, they rolled to that win 116-108. They were okay. Like, offensively, they were terrific. It's funny how I'm trying to be so consistent that we don't get caught up in only evaluating our team on how they shoot the ball. The real thing happened that night is the Jazz just didn't defend the rim. They didn't defend against the Rockets either. The Rockets were 7 of 21 at the rim. Minnesota was 16 of 18 at the rim, which was the worst percentage the Jazz have allowed in any game all season long at the rim. They defended numerous other places pretty well. Above the break, three went in against them that night, and that's, you know, that there's a variable aspect to that. But so there's the defense, really the thing they could control was how they defended at the rim, and the Jazz did not do that. The next night, we went to Sacramento and put out one of our top 10 defensive performances of the year. Not a particularly strong offensive outing, but against a not great defensive offensive team, did exactly what you want. Had the third best night of the year around the restricted area. They were scared to go in. They didn't take a shot with Rudy in the restricted area, nor has really anyone for a while. But they did not take a shot in the restricted area when Rudy was on the floor until sometime in the second quarter. But if you look back for a while here, teams are not getting – Rudy came back against the Knicks, and Atlanta, Detroit, and Toronto got to the rim. And since then, very few teams have gotten to the rim. Memphis 17 times, Charlotte 17, Portland 32, which is a lot. But we defended it great that night. San Antonio 20, Phoenix 16, Portland 18, Dallas 14, Houston 21, Minnesota 18 shots, Sacramento 22 shots. Just very rarely are teams getting all the way in the paint. They're taking a huge amount of shots in the paint non-restricted area because of Rudy, and that is the lowest percentage shot in the NBA. It's why I separate those two in all conversations, is because it's the lowest shot percentage in the NBA. Night two of the weekend where the Jazz had to win both games and did was against Sacramento. And that game, really, the Jazz take a 7-point lead early in the second quarter. I think it was 25-20, and they hit a three. And the game never really gets back inside of seven. So I just thought the Jazz methodically did what they were supposed to do. Donovan quietly, seemingly walked out to 27. Gobert had 16 and 12. Favors has just been incredible. I tweeted out some numbers this weekend about he's 82% at the rim since late January. He's just a dominating force with his power. Hit a three. I'm totally convinced Derek's going to shoot 30-plus percent from three next year. And then Jay Crowder, so the shot selection. But Sacramento doesn't really tax you. And every time the Jazz got a little push from Sacramento, they push back. And it just there wasn't – and the Jazz didn't blow them out, but it wasn't one that felt like it was in doubt. The offense was distinctly average. Hit a few more threes, got back over double-digit threes again for the first time in five games, which is the first time since the All-Star break, which where the Jazz live. So that was good. Got the blender, as Quinn likes to refer to it, kind of rolling a little bit. So that was good. But I'm not sure I'm really moved by that, but not in a bad way either. I just think that's what you're supposed to do. And that's the key to this whole thing. And this whole run, the Jazz are trying to somehow miraculously make the playoffs in a conference where nobody loses. The Jazz have this plethora of games coming up against teams that aren't good, and they simply have to make sure that they win those games. The above-the-break three-point shooting is an area where I have focused a lot. It was a little better the other night, but it really has been off. Phoenix, 9 of 28. Portland, 6 of 21, 29%. Dallas, 6 of 25, 24%. Houston, 4 of 25, 16%. No wonder you didn't win. Minnesota, 7 of 21, 33%. Sacramento, a little bit better, back up to 39%. So that's above average. We're still, frankly, if you take it back to the Detroit, even just to the win streak, so you take the Detroit game, which was not a good one, a 5 of 20, and you run it, we're still above average here for this period of time. We're stabilizing, though, out of the insane hotness that the team was for a while and into something that's probably a little bit more realistic to what one would expect for the season. And, you know, we've talked more than anyone likes about regression of the mean. Regression of the mean is a boring concept because it says that you're not going to be brilliant all the time. But since Detroit, we're 37% on above the break three. So we're probably stabilizing it back in the right direction. Here. So that was the weekend, and really the Jazz did exactly what you want them to do. Nothing flashy. And we'll walk through. There are some areas of concern. We'll look at a few things. I thought there was a great leadership quote as well from Rudy. Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6 Belts, Utah company. If you have not heard of Grip 6 already, I'm really excited to tell you about them. It's a belt company that I've now used exclusively. And it's really, really cool because they have no holes on the belt. It just slides through this patented loop. There's no loops that you have to, like, put the thing and hope it fits. It doesn't quite fit. You're in between. None of that. Slides through and just comes secure in this patented format. And then it's got a bunch of great, great designs. They've got a new flag series where you can get the American flag. If you're Canadian, you can get the Canadian flag. I love the stickly wood that they have, and they have the classic series. And then that's part two that's so cool about this, is that you can go take your belt and you buy the belt section, and then you can switch whatever one of the buckles that you want to have on there. So you might want to have the really cool Aurora belt buckle with the black webbing strap, and you just can mix and match with all of it. Check it out, grip6.com. It's grip6.com. Use the promo code LOCKED and get 20% off. That's promo code LOCKED and you get 20% off. And we have, from a bunch of feedback from listeners, been told that if you're more heavy set and had some belt issues, this is a fabulous answer for you. Grip6.com. Today's show also brought to you by The Advocates. Matt and the crew over at The Advocates doing a wonderful job to help people in Utah at utahadvocates.com. Injury attorneys who help predominantly with car accidents. And here's the deal on car accident situations. Only less than 1% go to trial, 3% go to arbitration. So therefore, once you call The Advocates at 801-355-5550, an attorney calls you back in 60 seconds, and that clicks in the incredible 106-step checklist that Matt and the people at The Advocates have built. And with that 106-point checklist, they start running you through the system. It allows the attorney to work with you exclusively while special teams people work on the various things on those steps, and they're the experts at that step. Through all this, you get efficiency, which means productivity, which means communication, which means expediting the process. Experts at their task inside the process, and the attorney talking with you throughout the process. It's Utah Advocates. You'll get good results. They'll make sure nothing bad happens to you, and they'll treat you well in the process. 25 years of work to help out people in Utah. Call 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. Utah Advocates. All right, part two today. Rubio is struggling right now, and that may be the best part about the last two wins. At least he's struggling with a shot. He's been great at everything else. The Jazz usually need Rubio to make shots, particularly without Rodney's variability. Now you need to have somebody who's pretty consistent getting things out there. And all of a sudden, Ricky, since the break, coming back from the hip injury, just lost whatever mojo he had before has kind of disappeared. Last five games, 31%, 23% from three. Now he's doing everything else. He's got 5 rebounds, 5 assists, steal and a half a game. He's been in the midst of a ton of stuff. He's making great defensive plays. He's really learned how to play defense with Rudy behind him and done numerous terrific things there to help the Jazz out a great deal. But the shot is suddenly not falling. So that is having an impact kind of on who the Jazz are and where their offense is going. And how they're playing. The pick and roll stuff's interesting because he has improved some of his pick and roll numbers since Rudy's come back. Rubio and Favors are much, much better together. In fact, they're one of the better pick and roll combinations. Rubio and Gobert's pick and roll numbers are much, much better together. So since January 18th, when Ricky has found himself, now he's better with both Ricky and Derek. Now, what's interesting on the other end is Donovan is really struggling since then with Derek Favors. That pick and roll combination is not working, whereas Gobert and Donovan have improved considerably recently. The best pick and roll combination we have on this team still is Joe Ingles and Derek Favors are as good a combination as there is in the league since January 19th when Rudy came back. But they've been good all year long. They're the best combination the Jazz have out there. Udo's very good on these pick and rolls as well. He just sets such great picks, but he's not getting any time right now. So that's one. And then there is this kind of weird second unit basketball right now that the Jazz are playing that I think is trying to figure out an identity of who they are and who's supposed to score and what they're supposed to, who's supposed to do what when they're on the floor. Now, AB, who just has split the season from a front start that was so good and so encouraging, shooting 44% from the field and 40% from three in that stretch, and then all of a sudden just cannot find it right now, did not play the other night. So he was out of the rotation. I don't know when Dante comes back how it fits, because I always thought he was going to take AB's minutes, but all of a sudden there aren't AB's minutes. Royce O'Neal, who has been terrific, suddenly had a game without any points and actually has not shot the ball great recently. He's kind of coming back to some, I don't know if you want to call it back to life, but I mean, he's 5 of his last 22 from the field. Since he's been in the rotation, he's a 7 point a game guy, 44% from the field, 40% from three, which is great, but he's just not going to go score. Jonas is trying to push it. Jonas played against Sacramento. I don't know if you noticed, but Jonas had a pretty long stretch. He checked in at the 4:22 mark of the third quarter and never checked out of the game. That can't be right. Yeah, maybe it is. That doesn't seem right. Seems like we'd have too many. Nope, that is not right. I'm looking at popcorn.net. It gave me that, but that has 6 players on the floor. So, no wonder we beat Sacramento. We had 6 players on the floor. No, that's not right for Jonas. That's a mistake on my favorite site, popcornmachine.net. One other note, the early returns on the Jay Crowder lineup are terrific. Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert. Numbers are plus, only played 4 games together, but they're plus 27. And then the other one is it's interesting, is the Joe Ingles, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal with Favors and Gobert lineup. Which hasn't played a lot together because Royce O'Neal's just in the rotation, but that's been very good. Though a lot of people ask whenever you do the Favors Gobert numbers, with Rubio, they've been better recently than without. It was earlier this year. It was the other way around. Favors and Gobert on the floor in the last 19 games are plus 85. Positive in 12 of the 19. Defensive rating below 107 of the 19. Defensive rating below 104 and 11 of the 19. And have outscored opponents 686 to 619. So that is seemingly working here for a little while and giving the Jazz some insight or something there. So that second unit, though, it's also leading to some turnovers. At least that's the way I'm interpreting, is that no one's quite sure who's going to shoot and where they're going to shoot from. And so when they're not sure who's going to shoot and where they're going to shoot from, they're all making an extra pass. Frankly, that unit used to be Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson, and those guys didn't shoot a great deal. And so when now in that second unit, we're seeing the turnover issues kind of spark their head a little bit and see if the Jazz can take care of it. The Jazz were better against Minnesota. They turned it over 16% of their percent of their possessions, which is okay. And then they got it back down to 12 against Utah. So maybe, or against Sacramento. So maybe that will suffice the problems. And there wasn't the big Donovan with 8 or anything like that. Big number. But that bench unit, Ron mentioned it in postcast, has everyone a little concerned of whether Crowder, O'Neal, Jarebko, and then Neto hasn't found his rhythm, is creating going to be able to create enough offense. And there's not really another answer. It's not like we're short a guy. I mean, Dante comes back, but we're not short an offensive player. I mean, AB is the guy that you would hope was going to pick that up, and that just has not happened as of yet. And the telling one the other night for AB is he hesitated on a few shots, and I almost wonder if the coaching staff sat him for a game almost as a way to say, hey, we got you in a slump, but we still believe in you and want you to shoot and score, and if you're going to hesitate and not take shots, then, you know, you're not a defensive stalwart. You're not the greatest passer in the world. You know, we want you out there to do your job, you know, and your job is to make shots and create plays. And the night before, he was 0-for-1 in 11 minutes. So, but also, you know, you're still melding Crowder in. Crowder's shooting and taking shots at a much higher rate than he's ever taken in his career. Right now, and he's probably, you know, similar probably the way Rubio did when Rubio came here, that he looked up and he sees this opportunity and it's like, hey, I'm going to grasp this. And then you got to kind of figure out whether or not that's the right answer for you. One, you know, one thing I'm watching off the Jazz, former Jazz guy, is Rodney Hood. And for a few reasons. One is because, well, we all like Rod. We like Kyle and we like George. So you watch the Cavaliers an awful lot right now. The other one is just, I'm so still curious of who he is as a player. And so, you know, one thing that's interesting is he's playing the exact same amount of minutes with Cleveland that he did with Utah this year and last year, 27. The second one, of he's just scoring a lot less. He's getting a lot less looks. So that's where it gets second interesting, is that there was part of me that felt as though maybe we had just asked Rodney to do way too much and that it wasn't a fair ask. And so as he goes to a team now where he's a complimentary player, his bell curve will get narrower and he'll be a better player. So in the 8 games, which is a very small sample size, he's shooting a higher percentage at 43%. But really interesting is Cleveland, who's a huge three-point shooting rate team, he's actually decreased his three-point shooting rate a little bit. He's not going to the free throw line at all. His free throw rate is crazy small, but he's taking about 3% more shots as a two. Most of those are coming between the 3 and 10 foot range. He's not taking any long twos at all, and he's taking a few less three-point shots. He's making his three-point shot at a little lower percentage than he did. So the early returns are that there's not a spike in performance, even though you had kind of thought otherwise. He's in a little bit of a slump right now, and so is the team. So they've lost 3 of 4, and in that stretch, Rodney is 1 of 11 from three. He had a good game going 6 of 11 from the field, but remember the old Rodney 33% shooting or below. So if you remember, Rodney, in the last 2 years for us, I think 40% of his games he shot 33% or below. He's done it now in 2 of 8 games, so he's only at 25%, so that's a little bit better. He has had 2 other games at 36%, so the bell curve still seems really wide. It's interesting. The things that I thought were going to go for him in the correct direction when he went to Cleveland have not. Now, that's largely because he's taken 5 free throws in 8 games in about 160 minutes. And so, again, you're still in a circumstance where if you don't take free throws, it gets very hard to be able to be successful. Today's show brought to you in part by Intercap Lending. This is a 40-year mortgage lending company that has moved to Utah, run by a Romney. Glad to have them here. They're employing a lot of people. But if you're in any of 44 states, they can help you with their lending, and you're glad about that because they do 2 things superbly well. One is that they service their own loans, so they have long-term relationships, so they're able to do some things as a direct lender that might be able to help you out. So if you are self-employed and having problems getting your loan approved, you're having a bunch of business assets that makes it complicated, multiple properties, if you're a veteran, about half their business is VA because they get great VA pricing, then give them a call at 385-800-8528. That'll be Steve Carter, 385-800-8528. The other thing they do superbly well is the ease by which they get your lending done. They close the loan. They close the loan on time. They communicate through the app. They're going to give you a free appraisal when you solidify your loan with them because you're a Locked On Jazz listener, so make sure you tell them. The app's great. I used this. This is who we refinanced with. And when we refinanced, I'm so busy right now. There's no chance I was going to get this done in the old process, but I can sit there and take pictures with the app. They update me, tell me when things are due on the app. It was just a great communication system, not to mention Steve reached out personally a bunch of times as well. So give Steve Carter a call, 385-800-8528. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, playoff picture. No one's losing. In fact, San Antonio lost to the Lakers. It was the first time since February 15th that anyone had lost a game 3 through 10 in the Western Conference playoff race that was not to a team that was in the Western Conference playoff race, including Houston, Golden State. So let's do a quick update. Minnesota lost Friday and Saturday, but those were both games that they were in the unlikely category. San Antonio lost twice, Pelicans and Los Angeles. Those were both in the likely category. So there's the big swing right now is what's going on in San Antonio. Oklahoma City has lost the two games they weren't supposed to and snuck by in the three games they were supposed to win. So they're playing really very, very poorly right now, but have not slipped. They seem like they're teetering on falling apart, but they have Houston coming up, then an easy one against Phoenix. They're heavily favored against San Antonio, heavily favored against Sacramento, heavily favored against Atlanta, heavily favored against the Clippers. And by the time they run through that, they may be impossible to catch. Denver, who everyone thought was likely to catch after they dropped that game against the Clippers, went and grabbed one back with a surprising win against Cleveland over the weekend. Portland's rolling. They're winning every game they're supposed to. New Orleans is rolling. They're winning every game they're supposed to, plus the Spurs game they weren't. Clippers held on last night. They gave themselves a scare. They were in legitimate trouble last night against the Brooklyn Nets in a certain win category, but held on. And then the Jazz did what they were supposed to. So really, who's most vulnerable right now? San Antonio suddenly has slipped in. Who the second team is that's going to slip? The Jazz, we're looking for it. And the Jazz have an interesting one coming up tonight. New Orleans and the Clippers play. And I guess I don't know who we're rooting for, because we need the Clippers to lose because we got to catch the Clippers. We need the Pelicans to lose because we probably need to catch the Pelicans, unless we think Denver or San Antonio are going to become catchable. Here's the other one. Remember, the premise of this whole breakdown was that it's going to take 47 wins to get in, that you cannot lose a certain game. Any game that was between 80 and 100, I had a certain win. Should wins were 60 to 80% on the percentage is 538's win probability. Pick'ems were about 50%. Unlikelies were 20 to 40, and no chances were 0 to 20%. Here's what's happened so far. The certain wins, the teams are 6-0. So no one's blinked. The should wins, there have been 12 of them so far, and the teams are winning at 75%. They're supposed to be 60 to 80%. Teams are at 75%. San Antonio's dropped two. Denver dropped one, but that one that Denver dropped was to the Clippers. And so those are the only losses in there. Pick'ems, the Jazz lost one to Houston, and New Orleans, there haven't been a lot of them. New Orleans has played the other. And then the unlikely wins, which are supposed to be 20 to 40%, teams have won 5 of 11. With New Orleans winning 2 of those. So 2 kind of unexpected or less expected wins by New Orleans. So far, since we've kind of built this format, Portland's just executing. New Orleans has jacked themselves up higher in the rankings with stealing some wins. And Denver's kind of held ground despite turbulence, and San Antonio is struggling. And that's where we sit on the playoff race. That's today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. It's just nuttiness. Nothing's changed, by the way. My predictions to start were Minnesota at 50. They may get a little lower. San Antonio at 47. Oklahoma City at 49. Denver at 47. Portland at 48. New Orleans at 46, which should be up now. Clippers at 47, Jazz at 47. So San Antonio, the Clippers, and Denver are really the three teams, and New Orleans at this point that I think the Jazz are battling with. Two of them play each other tonight. I don't know which one we're rooting for. We'll have to beat both New Orleans in New Orleans and the Clippers in here to help us out. The Lakers are playing brilliantly, by the way. We have two games late against the Lakers that don't seem like they're going to be as easy as we thought they were going to be. This week, by the way, that the game's coming up tonight is that's tomorrow night. That game, that Clipper-Pel game's tomorrow night. Portland plays the Lakers tonight. That's actually a pick 'em. San Antonio has a 84% chance win against Memphis. For some reason, San Antonio loses tonight. Panic button clicks in. And then full schedule on Tuesday while we're traveling to Indianapolis. And then Thursday, we've got a bunch of kind of interesting games where teams might slip. Minnesota goes up against Boston with a high win probability on Minnesota's side, and Boston's playing pretty well. All right, that is it. Have a great one. Thanks for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On NBA Today has the fabulous Biggest Stories Local Experts show hosted by Josh Lloyd. Hope you enjoy it.